A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Delaney DeMino, The Fan. 680, 93.7 FM. Your favorite song about the water. It's National Tuna Day. So that's why it's the X platform question.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy National Tuna Day, Buck, to you as well. Stinchcomb, Matt Stinchcomb, Steve West, Westy, in for Chris DeMino. He is back tomorrow. Brock Heward will talk about Michael Penix Jr. and what to anticipate if you're a Falcons fan. He is scheduled to join us, does a lot of sports talk radio out in Seattle. He will join us at 1:20. The 1 o'clock hour is brought to you by the fine folks over at AquaGuard. So the odd way to describe the Falcons, and we kind of touched on this earlier, is the fact that they have a ready-made roster. That's what a lot of people said about this team when Kirk Cousins decided to sign here. Well, you've got potentially some pieces on offense, but you still have a lot of holes on defense. I don't know if ready-made is the right way. Turnkey is the right way, Stinchcomb, to describe this roster.
Yeah, I would say that if you say that it's ready-made or even turnkey, then you can't have any issue with the Michael Penix pick, right? I mean, then it's, all right, you're literally like, we've got our guy at quarterback, but he's only got so much runway in front of him. We've got everything else. Now that we've got Kirk, now we can just bring in our succession plan. Let's just go ahead and do it now. It's like drafting a place kicker in the first round. We got all the other pieces. We just need a kicker. Okay, great. So then go get the kicker, which incidentally has happened. But it just doesn't seem to be the case. No, it's interesting that now that seems to be the commentary around the team. Whereas before going into the draft, it's like, all right, here are the needs. This is what they need to do. You got to shore up this defense. And yet, so now post-pick, it's, well, you know, it's a ready-made roster. These guys are, it's interesting how things have kind of whipsawed around the perception of that roster. And it's all just perception. And the team itself, obviously their opinion matters the most. Maybe that's what the message is internally, is that they think we got enough. So let's just go ahead and bring in our 10-year insurance policy.
It's interesting. I was mentioning the 2004 Falcons season earlier. We were talking about work done and the awards and recognition that is so well-deserved for him. But if you think back 20 years ago to 2004, the Falcons were coming off of a losing season. Dan Reeves was not retained. In fact, Dan Reeves didn't finish out the season. Wade Phillips finished out the season. So you had a first-year head coach, much like you have this year. You had your franchise quarterback, obviously, in Michael Vick, but the need at the time was defense. And so what did the Falcons do? They went out and drafted D'Angelo Hall with the 8th pick, ironically enough, cornerback, Virginia Tech. Then they got Michael Jenkins, the wide receiver from Ohio State, who figures large in Falcons lore, catching Matt Ryan's first ever pass for a touchdown. Later, they got the insurance policy / young quarterback that was going to be there in case in Matt Schaub from the University of Virginia. I think if you look what the Falcons did in the 2004 draft, 20 years ago, especially with that first round pick at number 8, I think you can make an argument that what they did then makes more sense than what they did now.
In the meantime, you have people like our friend Christopher Mad Dog Russo up at ESPN and Sirius XM Satellite Radio saying this to Kirk Cousins.
Who cares what Kirk Cousins thinks? You got $90 million guaranteed, and you've won one playoff game in your life. And all you do if you're Kirk Cousins, you get your butt to Atlanta as far as training camp is concerned. You play great football, and you make sure Penix can't play because you're playing so damn well. And I tell you something else you do. If you're such a great... If somebody walked into my radio station thinking that he was the heir apparent, you know what I do? I teach him everything about radio because he ain't going to be better than me.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Huh. In this business, maybe where he works, that's the case. Maybe with him, that's the case. I've seen a lot of people in this business who are very insecure, sabotage others. And I'm saying if you're fighting for a job in the NFL, I'm not really sure you're going to hold that person's hand. Not saying Kirk Cousins won't do that, but that's not a given.
And that's another thing I'm really getting tired of hearing, the fact that Kirk Cousins has won one playoff game. That's true. He's 1-3. One win in his first four playoff games. You know who else was 1-3 in his first four playoff games? Matt Ryan. And I think he turned out all right, too. So I think we can just kind of put that to rest as well as some sort of barometer on his worthiness, Cousins, that is, to take over this Falcons franchise. My take is, though, you've undermined Kirk Cousins before the guy has had a chance to put a helmet on, to be fitted for a helmet. That's how I'm looking at this. Now, to your point earlier, Matt, how mentally tough is Kirk Cousins? Is this going to rattle him? Can he handle this? You have to understand the dynamic of the fan base here and some of the ugly moments that were observed while Chris Chandler was still the quarterback and Michael Vick was on the roster. What happens the first time Cousins throws a pick at crunch time?
What if they
and how quick are the fans going for penance? He's got to deal with all that because that's a very real thing here in Atlanta.
These are the controversies now you have invited. What if they go through, you know, a 1-3 stretch and Cousins doesn't play well? What if in the preseason, you touched on this, Matt, earlier, what if in the preseason Penix plays very, very well? I don't know how much Kirk Cousins is going to play in the preseason. I mean, you're inviting a lot of conversations that maybe weren't going to be here before. Had you gone one way or the other, either Cousins or Penix, but not both.
Who cares what Kirk Cousins thinks?
By the way, can we get him like some breath management lessons? It sounds like he's about to pass out.
Patience,
every
we
comment.
Love you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. He gets wound up, doesn't he? What's interesting to me, and the whole thing is that you paid the guy like you thought he was the guy, and I think it's more than justifiable. The playoff thing is kind of it's a trite at this point. You're just like, we've beaten this thing in the ground. You got what else you got for me? Because you talk to anybody in and around the league, you look at the guy, even his performances, statistics, consistency. But Kirk Cousins came into the league, he was drafted right after they took Robert Griffin III. So that was an odd situation. He's been in this situation before in some ways, except it was kind of flipped. And obviously we know RG3 did not work out, the injuries and other things. And so shortened career and Kirk Cousins was ultimately able to kind of ascend to that starting position and never really relinquished it. So it's not like he's not used to being in a competitive environment, all those other things. It just keeps coming back to it's hard to manage the rest of everyone else that this impacts. Kirk might be able to handle it. Michael Penix might be able to handle it. What about everybody else, including a coaching staff that hasn't coached together before? There's a lot of new here, a lot. You got a new OC, new DC, new head coach, not just one new quarterback, but now two new quarterbacks.
And you've got an offensive coordinator who is very talented, they say, as far as coaches are concerned, but he's never been a coordinator. He's never called plays.
It's just, you think about that. With any team, it's always, there's four people. It's the two coordinators, the head coach, and the quarterback. They have the biggest influence on the program. And now you have all of that is new. And you got the bonus new quarterback who isn't just a guy. He's a number 8 overall pick.
And Taylor Heinicke, last I checked, was still on this roster. And if you recall last year, coming into the season, Desmond Ridder had started the final four games of the 2022 season. And the Falcons simply anointed him as QB1. Without any kind of legitimate competition during training camp, which I said at the time I felt like was a mistake. And I was a Desmond Ridder guy at the time. Still am. I hope he has a good career out there in Arizona backing up Kyler Murray. Hope he plays long enough to collect a pension. I thought he did a lot of good things last year.
It's only going to help me in the long run.
The problem is he made a lot of bad mistakes at the worst
same
possible
mistakes
time.
Over
okay.
and over again.
Fast forward to this year. Kirk Cousins is QB1. Are the Falcons going to simply anoint Michael Penix as QB2, or is there going to be a legitimate competition during training camp and in the preseason between Taylor Heinicke and Michael Penix to see if Penix deserves that?
Are they going to put Michael Penix Jr. on ice? A lot of people feel that, Matt, that's what they're going to do. Taylor Heinicke is going to be the backup quarterback no matter what, and you're not going to see Penix on the field this year.
That was kind of, as you were saying that, Wesley, it's a good point, is it seems like that would make the most sense, right? I mean, this guy, you have no intention. This is the commentary that's coming around this pick is you got no intention of playing Michael Penix in the foreseeable future, the near term future, next couple seasons. And so, if that's the case, do you want to put him in, you know, kind of an undue circumstance, duress? You know, maybe the offensive line isn't performing. Maybe it's an early season injury. Who knows? Do you really want to throw him out there? And if that's the case, wow. Then you really have what a massive investment of that pick. Because it does make sense from the insurance policy, the succession plan, all that makes sense. Why throw him out there? Why risk it? Why risk injuring his confidence or worse? Because it's not like Michael Penix has the cleanest injury history in the world. And we're not talking about, you know, nicks here and there. We're talking about full-blown ligaments that you need to perform. So if that's the case, that would make sense from an insurance policy standpoint. But then that now erodes. And this is the problem with the whole circumstance, is that as soon as you justify it one way, it renders the other justification, you know, meaningless. It's illegitimate at that point. You can't have, there is no sound footing where as soon as you say, all right, this is why it makes sense over here. Yeah, bubble wrap the guy. He's your insurance policy. He's the succession plan. But wait a minute, you're going to bubble wrap the number 8 pick in the draft? That doesn't make, and this is a guy that you think could play.
There's a lot more questions than answers right now.
And even the answers.
Safe to say.
It's not a crapshoot.
Here's another one, Nick. Wouldn't the Falcons have been better off? And again, we saw Taylor Heinicke last year. He did some good things. He did some bad things. But Taylor Heinicke is Taylor Heinicke. They're paying him, I believe, $4 million this year. Wouldn't the Falcons have been better off just keeping Desmond Ridder on the roster and paying him the $1.1 million that he was due and go out and spend the money on something else? These are all questions that are going to play themselves out as we proceed here with off-season workouts starting on May 13th.
I wanted to ask you real quick, Brock Huard is coming up in a few minutes before we take a break, Matt, about Chris Lindstrom brought this up, the Guardian caps. You can wear them in games now. They're smaller. Obviously, they consider them safer to wear as opposed to just the helmet. Is that something anybody's going to take the step and wear? That's the question.
Talking about in-game?
Yeah.
Because I think Lindstrom
You
can if you want to.
He says he's not.
Yeah, I view that. First of all, I think those things are fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a needed evolution, and they've learned.
I'm thinking about just walking around with one of them because you never know. There's a lot of construction going on in the battery.
What are you doing as a pedestrian? Where are you walking, man? Some rough areas. I got hit in the head twice on the way to work. I do think that, you know, it's like, you remember when Will Chamberlain was, he was like a career whatever free throw shooter, like sub 50%, and then he starts shooting at granny style like Rick Barry, and he's like 70-plus percent. It skyrockets, but he couldn't take the ridicule for shooting at granny style, so he goes back to being a terrible, who knows how many points. My point being, the cool factor. It's just, you know, you don't want to look like Mark Kelso out there, the great Gazoo, who's running down there with that big, like, cushiony helmet.
Yeah.
It just looks
Don
bad.
Don Beebe used to wear one of those, too.
Beebe wear it, too? Bills guys.
Yeah,
Steve Wallace,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Steve Wallace had one,
the helmet,
right?
On the helmet.
And so, you know.
It's like Rick Moranis in Spaceballs.
Careful, you idiot. I said across her nose, not up it. Sorry, sir. Doing my best.
Was it Otis Sistrunk?
The cool factor's not there. There's no doubt about that.
Was it Upshaw or Otis Sistrunk that wore the helmet that had like the extra layer down the middle? I'm thinking late 70s or mid-70s helmet. He had a different looking helmet. I remember there was a lot of pushback in Major League Baseball about that goofy batting helmet they were wearing in the minors, and nobody in the majors wanted to wear it. It was like a Gazoo helmet.
Yeah, it's just, you know, looks matter. You know, what do they say? Look good, play good. And I love those caps. They're a needed evolution. Maybe they can incorporate it to where it would look good. But I think that right now, until somebody does it, and it's supposed to, like, you know, this is whatever, was it swaggy or something?
Well, if you're going to wear that on the field, listen, kudos to you. You're right. It's making the game safer. But you know that people are going to be coming at you during the game.
You better ball
Lord
out.
Knows what they're going to be saying to you during the game.
Please mic up whoever the players are.
Exactly.
Maybe that's why. You know what? Now I really want them to wear it in a game. for the content
alone. That's all I want to see. Because NFL Films, they got the microphones every place.
Who's going to take the first step? It's like Joe Montana and Dwight Clark crossing the picket line in 87 when they were on strike. Who's going to make the first move here?
I guess someone will do it eventually. Brock,
you made that man a gunner?
I did, sir. He's my cousin.
He is the guy that saw Michael Penix Jr. play up close in person. He'll tell you, Falcons fans, what to expect. We'll talk some NFL and college with Brock Heward when we come back. It's Chiellini and Domino, Matt Stinchcomb, Steve West in for Domino. He is back tomorrow. It's The Fan, 680, 93.7 FM and The Fan app.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Chiellini, Domino, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Braves off tonight. They start that series in Los Angeles tomorrow. They got the best record in baseball, 20-9. That's a winning percentage of .690, and that's your Wellstar Wellstat of the day.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. It's the best, in fact, Sned. From managing chronic conditions to staying on top of screenings, the experts at Wellstar are going to partner with you to help you feel your best. Together, we can create a personalized game plan to help keep you healthy. Visit Wellstar.org today. Wellstar, more than healthcare, people care. Let's talk to a guy that saw Michael Penix Jr. over the years, saw a lot when it comes to college football. Brock Heward, kind enough to join us right now on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line here on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Brock, appreciate the time this afternoon. How are you?
Oh, that's funny. I thought we were going to talk about the Mariners winning the series. I thought we were going to talk about all that swing and miss from those Mariners aces shoving it at the Braves over there. That's what I thought we were talking about. No?
Listen, Brock, you got to wear it if you're a Braves fan the first couple of games. There's nothing you can do about it. But the Mariners and their staff, tremendous. I will tell you this, that foghorn, after a while, that gets old.
Yeah, I understand. But there honestly is a really good transition. I'm not good at these things in radio, but there is a good transition from the Mariners staff, which has four just elite dudes. They really do. Luis and Logan and George and Bryce have just unique stuff. And so does the guy that's going to be quarterbacking at some point down in Atlanta. I don't think it'll be this season. We'll see. But Michael Penix, if he were a pitcher, is just got stuff that's different than everybody else.
And so obviously the Falcons saw the same thing when they decided to take him at eight. Is he going to be okay with sitting for a couple of years? Because that's kind of a weird thing. Everybody thinks about that second contract in the NFL. You know him as a person. He seems like a good kid.
Yeah, that's the problem is you have five pitchers. Kind of like Stinch was one of five on an O-line. You need five linemen. You need five guys in a rotation. But in the NFL, you got one QB, and you got in Kirk Cousins, a really established quarterback. And to me, that's like the biggest challenge in all of this. Like, I could write you out, and you guys have certainly spent a lot of time since Thursday talking about it, and you will all offseason and probably in the regular season. You know, there is a script to write where you say, gosh, they could look like geniuses. They could look like Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. They could look like Smith to Mahomes. They could look like they used to do in the 80s and 90s, developing quarterbacks and letting them watch and letting them grow. But the challenge is what you committed to Kirk, and I just don't know how that flies in a locker room. Like, you've just brought so much unrest by bringing an uber-talented guy that's going to wow his teammates, wow the locker room, wow you guys watching out at OTAs and training camp as Kirk is still rehabbing. And then all of a sudden, oh, that's right, right, we paid and invested and committed $100 million to this other guy that's been in the league for 15 years and maybe has as high a Q rating after his docuseries a year and a half ago as any QB we've seen in a while. So that's where it just gets super, super complicated. Can he wait his turn? Sure. Is he a good dude? Yes. Has he been through hell and back as a football player? You bet. So he's got a unique and mature perspective. But what you've done to the locker room, to me, is going to be the biggest challenge moving forward.
Being in a locker room, a competitor, quarterback, there's only one football. And the maturity that's required, that's now being asked of both of these guys, both of these quarterbacks, but then the balance of the roster too, right? We're talking about the number of reps in practice and how guys respond. And as a competitor in Michael Penix, who's used to being the guy, the coveted guy by multiple programs collegiately, how do you see that playing out? You've been in a locker room with an elite quarter with elite quarterbacks when you were in Indianapolis. How do you perceive that scenario?
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate. You know, there was my last year in Seattle was Trent Dilfer, Matt Hasselbeck, and me. And man, what an awesome room. And then Trent and Matt, you had guys that, you know, had been to a Super Bowl, both of them. Trent won one, and, you know, they made it work. And quite honestly, I think Michael and Kirk share a lot of beliefs, a lot of convictions, a lot of lifestyle, that I think they'll be fine. Really, Matt, I think that they will operate. Yeah. They'll be mature. But you tell me how the receiver room is going to handle that. Tell me how the DB room is going to handle that. Mm-hmm. Tell me how the running back and tight end room is going to handle that. Tell me that they're going to have that same level of maturity and decorum as those two are. I don't see that. You know, that to me is, again, where you've just brought a huge, huge challenge and dynamic to the team. And it's going to require a lot from Raheem Morris and a lot of maturity, and Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator, a lot of maturity from everybody on that staff, in that building, to all be on the same page, handle their individual rooms. Quite honestly, the quarterback room might be the least of my concerns if I'm a Falcon follower and fan. How does that rest of the team not become divided, not become enthralled, not become cliquish, not become survivor, you know, island, and I got this guy and I want that guy? How does the rest of the group handle that? To me, that's where more of the concern lies.
Brock, we see all the time players that are outstanding at the college level. For whatever reason, it doesn't translate to the pros. And there's no doubt that Penix had a really special group of skilled people there at Washington. I'm talking Roma Dunze, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, strong offensive linemen. Do you think he can translate that game and that simpatico that he had with those skilled people at Washington to a very impressive skill room here in Atlanta that includes the likes of Kyle Pitts, also the running back there, and Drake London.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a couple good tackles too. I mean, I think that group up front will be as important as anybody. And I'll just kind of rewind it back, and Stinch brought it up, you know, with Michael Penix being admired and wanted by a lot of people in college football. He was so mature in this process when he transferred. You didn't see pictures of Michael Penix at UCLA. You didn't see him going through the whole recruiting process. You didn't see a big public, you know, foray and look at me. You saw a guy that went and was unbelievably selective. And when he met with Kalen DeBoer, said, Kalen, if we're going to do this, tell me what you got. Tell me how we're going to do this. Tell me about the people around me. You know, unlike getting drafted where you don't have a say, he was of the ilk where he got to really select, and he knew what he needed, and he needed people in front of him to protect him long enough to protect himself. And I think the most impressive beyond when you guys will listen to him throw a football and you will hear it sizzle out of his hand, when you watch those RPMs, all that's super impressive. To me, the body work over those 28 games that he played in Seattle and only lost three of them, the most impressive was how little he got hit. How little and how much he protected himself. Do you guys remember that old John Gruden show that they used to do? And it was so good in the early years where John had the QB prospects and he sat them in his little room down there in Orlando, and he went through the fire, you know, football coaches academy and everything else. And how many times he would look those guys in the eye and say, man, how are you going to handle the sheriff? How are you going to take on Brady and Manning? You know what these guys do? They protect themselves. They play every single week. They're available because they know how to protect the ball and protect themselves. Michael did such a phenomenal job of that the last 2 years, and that may be the greatest trait he brings to you in Atlanta.
Brock Heward is with us for a few more minutes on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. You brought up Jimmy Lake. Of course, it didn't end the way he wanted it to end at Washington, but as everybody knows, he's the defensive coordinator now with the Falcons. What to anticipate from him based on what you've seen?
He was an unbelievable defensive coordinator, and I was wrong. You know, we sat in a lot of production meetings, and I would have co-signed on that, and Chris Peterson co-signed on that, right, when they elevated him from D-coordinator head coach, because I would have thought, kind of like Scott Frost at Nebraska, this guy is a surefire home run. Like, this is going to work. He is so good in that room. He is so good in our production meetings. He is so equipped and ready after all this time under Chris to step into that and run with it, and obviously didn't go that way for a number of different reasons, and COVID was probably a big part of that, and certainly an explanation and excuse. As a D coordinator, he's awesome. Guys love him. They love playing for him. He's got a swag to him. He's got a, you know, borderline that confidence and cockiness. He walks that really well. His acumen, right, of taking away routes and understanding route combinations and teaching it and employing it. I thought that was where his genius was. And look at all the dudes he produced in the secondary while at Washington. Buda Baker at the head of the list. So, yeah, I think he's super savvy. Raheem Morris, I'm sure, had a pick of a lot of people that wanted to work with him as a defensive-minded head coach and work alongside of him. And Jimmy Lake is a really good hire in that way.
And we are in the Southeast. So before we let you go, Kalen DeBoer, what can Alabama fans expect to see from him?
Cool poise. I think poise personified. He never flinches. You watch that spring game, even though the grass in Tuscaloosa was a mess with all the rain and the freezing and everything else. He is super steady Eddie. He just never flinches. My God, when we did the Apple Cup this year, the final one, and he goes for it on fourth down at his own 28-yard line. And if he didn't get it, they don't go to the playoffs. He didn't get it. Their season, like, it's, you know, it ain't happening. And you just watched his demeanor in that moment, like, yeah, we got it. Yeah, well, I like that call, and it's got lots of options, and totally empower and trust the people around me and go for it. The only question is the Ryan Grubb and Scott Huff. Those are big, big losses. I love the D coordinator. Womack's awesome. So many of the other people and the personnel are terrific. But it's going to be a work in progress because Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer showed over 2 years with Michael that they were two of the best from a head coach and coordinator standpoint, and that's some big shoes for Sheridan to follow him.
But it seems like mentally he's the type of guy that's not going to have an issue replacing a guy like Nick Saban.
No, he's not. And I think there's some benefit to that. I think there's some benefit from some South Dakota soil that runs through him, that he's just as humble as they get, genuine as they get. And, I don't think he's just, like, blown away and enamored and caught up in all the social media stuff that many of his peers, I don't know, like Deion and Boulder are, or laying down at Ole Miss is. Like, he's just not going to play any of those games, and he's going to develop really well. He's done it everywhere he's been. And yeah, that South Dakota, you could take the boy out of South Dakota, but man, there's still a lot of South Dakota in him. And I think that plays well in Tuscaloosa.
All right, Brock, great insight. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us, and go Mariners. Now that the Braves fans don't have to worry about them anymore.
And onward and upward. And go Braves. I love those Braves. Go Braves.
All right. Appreciate it. See you, Brock. Brock Heward with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Willie Wade his turn. And it's interesting to hear Brock Heward about Michael Penix say the same things. Matt Stinchcomb, you both have spent a lot of time in NFL locker rooms. You both stand in agreement. What's going to happen day to day in these locker rooms? Because, you know, players are human, and they're going to observe, and they're going to have their own opinions, and they'll tell the media something different. But behind the scenes, what's going to happen?
He nailed it. I mean, it's not the quarterback room. It's all the other rooms. It's how's everybody else going to deal with it? These two guys, they've dealt with adversity. They've dealt with competitive landscape. They've played the position. They understand that, you know, you can only have one guy out there at a time. And because of that, I think that they'll be able to manage their way through it. It's not ideal, but it's the ability to control the mindset and perception of the rest of that roster. And by the way, and that needs to be influenced not just by those two guys, because it's hard. Your quarterback is a de facto leader. Those guys are definite leaders. How do they lead on that topic with their roster? That's really tough when they are the subject of what needs to be led. No, now it has to be led by a brand new coaching staff.
Everyone's
new to everybody. Yes.
Yeah. And again, there's another difference between Green Bay and here. You've got new starters, you've had established starters, and you had them in Green Bay two times over with Favre with Rodgers behind him, and then Rodgers with Love behind him.
Yeah. It's not
the same.
A lot of variables.
Yeah, I think that what Heward brought up about the locker room is something that maybe a lot of folks haven't thought that all the way through. But again, Nick, and Matt as well, you were around here to see the dynamic when Chandler was still the quarterback, the starter, and
they had the package in place for the rookie, Michael Vick.
Was waiting his turn. That's another question. Is there a package in mind for Michael Penix?
I don't think he's going to play.
Or is it total bubble wrap?
I mean, anything and everything usually does happen when you say something like that. But I think best case scenario for the Falcons, they don't want him to play. Taylor Heineke's going to be the backup quarterback this year.
I cannot imagine. I have a real hard time. The only thing you would do it right is to allow Michael Penix to kind of scratch that competitive itch. And maybe he's just like, look, man, you got to let me do something. Which would probably be pretty short-sighted on his part to push for that. But could you imagine? So let's just talk that through. We put a package in. Was it a red zone package? Is it a short yardage package
red zone,
or something?
Yeah.
Right, okay. You sure don't want him running the football.
No.
So what is it? We're moving the pocket. I don't know what we're doing. But if we're doing that and the guy gets banged up, he gets not even injured, but just nicked, and everybody's just, you know, the collective gasp of, oh, that conversation is, so wait a minute, you idiots. Why would you create a package? The guy's not even your guy. You take your guy out of the game, you put Penix in there, and then he gets injured, and that's your insurance policy, and you're going to waste him on situational offense? I keep coming back to, yeah, I can justify it over here, but as soon as I do that, it's like a balancing of the scales. Now things are completely, now we're out of whack again somewhere else.
And Nick, you remember when Vic took that hard hit to the shoulder on the goal line against Carolina in that very situation at the Georgia Dome.
Yeah, and people were saying, what on earth is happening? Do we want to protect our guy or not? What I do know is we're probably going to see 18, maybe 20 games when Michael Penix is starting for the Falcons, because the commissioner planted the seed. And you know this, guys, whenever the commissioner states something publicly, we're thinking about doing this. No, you're not thinking about it. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, this 18-game season. It's going to cross over to that.
Yeah, that's a shot across the bow. Across the bow, not up it. And that's exactly what he's doing. Hey, heads up, everybody. Hey, rosters. And you know what? I got to say this. Don't tell me player safety. I don't want to hear about player safety. Every time you play that sport, you're in danger of injury and shortening your career. And so because of that, oh, we're going to change the kickoff rule. Okay. In the name of player safety. Sure you are. Of course that's what it is. Oh, and also we're going to ask you to play two more games, four more games. We want to add a preseason game. What are we doing? That's another one of those where you can't say one thing over here and then say, but, we're going to give you better armor, but we're going to put you at the front of this battle, and we're going to ask you to fight it four more times.
Well, the Thursday night games in and of themselves, it throws the safety argument right out the window. And those games are horrible games because guys are sore and guys are beat up, and you're limited with what you can do. Those games are bad for a reason.
Yeah, it's just it's hard to reconcile one to the other.
Anybody that's played in the league that I've talked to, whether it was Keith Brooking or Ovi Mihaly, has told me, 16 games is more than enough. Where are you on that as a player?
As a player, it's more than enough. All these guys, oh, look, what are we fighting now? More and more, it's guys are realizing, you know, every time I go out here, I'm shortening my career and or impacting my, long-term, I won't say health, but potentially, right? But just, we'll call it walking around comfort, where, you know, you don't want to end up like Earl Campbell, where the guy had an amazing career, but he ground his lower body down to...
He looks 90 when you see him today. He looks 90 years old.
Do you ever see him standing up?
No.
No.
I don't think he can for an extended period of time.
Everything from the hips down are shot, maybe the hips too. And you just think, so. And so because of that, no. 16 is a gracious point. It's the reason why some of these guys are like walking medicine cabinets just to make it to 16.
What can the Players Association do besides garnering additional compensation to make this palatable to the players?
No, look, the Players Association, especially in football, what a joke. Joke. And it's not just the leadership, it's everything else. And the issue there, of course, is that for that to mean something, you have to be able to withhold something of value, right? So if you're ownership, they hold all the cards. And if I'm a player, I know I've got a narrow window. That's what we're talking about even now. You add games, you're shortening my window. You pay me by the year, right? So my contract might expand a little bit, but I'd rather play two more years than two more games a year. And so because of that, and incidentally, you are more prone to injury as the season would wane on. You're never as healthy as you are to start the season, typically. The best you'll ever feel is that first day of training camp, and then it's a war of attrition. And so because of that, you're sitting there going, as a player, I can't afford to hold out. And as collectively, so strike, it's not going to happen. There's too much money at risk. It should be more, especially if you're talking about asking them to play even more. But it will never be a commensurate amount that it should be, because the players don't have, I don't want to say the backbone, because it sounds like that's speaking to courage, and I'm not saying that at all. It's that they will not collectively hold out, or strike rather, and demand more, because they don't have the willpower is not even the right word either. It's just the numbers don't support the fact that they would say, you know what, we're not going to play ball. Now what? Now what are you going to do? Go find a bunch of scabs?
And the owners are billionaires. They can hold out longer than the players who, as you said earlier, if you don't know, they only get paid during the season. How many guys don't have any money by the time June rolls around? I've heard stories because they can't manage their money, and the owners know that.
And the average career is about three seasons. Three seasons. That's a drop in the bucket. This is not a lifetime achievement type sport. You better get it in while you can fit it in. And that's why they can't afford to strike, because that window closes.
You've told me this before. Forgive me for not remembering. What is the years and number of games that you had to play in order to qualify for a pension?
I should check and see what it is now. But it used to be, it's four seasons, but really it's 3 years and three games. So used to, you were on an active roster for three games in that season. That counts as a credited season. So you get your three credited seasons. You got to just be active for three games that fourth season. And now you've got your four seasons to be eligible for, you know, the pension, the 401k, the annuity.
Hence the reason the average career in the National Football League lasts 3 years.
Oh, it's you don't think that these billionaires, they're not sitting around just being like, well, shucks, you know, why would you think about 3 years? No, they sat down, they did the math. It makes sense. What we'll do is it'll be 4 years, four seasons, right? Knowing that the average is going to be less than that, then now you're obliged. Now, there is a pension involved. How many pensions are there out there anymore, right? That's a dinosaur, a relic of yesteryear. There is still that pension, but, you know, there's no lifetime health care? No. Could you imagine the burden that would put on the league? It'd be great if they would do it. I can't imagine them ever doing that, mainly because the players are not going to, they will not collectively leverage against that ownership, because they know you're forfeit. Every year that I don't play, there's a whole nother crop of players coming out of college.
I'm never getting that year back either.
I don't get that year back. Nope. And there's a whole nother year of now eligible players that could just take my spot. It's just, and so because of that, they'll play more games and they won't get a commensurate bump the way that they otherwise should have.
It's just like Jerry Glanville said, NFL, not for long.
Not for long. And you talk about how much money these guys have. The report is that Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, just turned down a $10.5 billion deal. Someone wanted to buy the Dolphins, the stadium, and that F1, the rights to the F1 race. And he said, thanks, but no thanks, because I want to keep it in the family. Yeah. That's how much money he has. He turned down $10.5 billion.
Yeah. It didn't move the needle. I mean, you know, I said, send me a number that can get my attention.
Well, and that number is just going to go up and up and up as long as he holds it. What did Arthur Blank pay for the Falcons? $545 million. Now it's worth $2 billion. Yeah. I think the Smith family paid $8.5 million for the expansion franchise back in the 60s. So you're absolutely right. It's like a valuable piece of real estate. Just sit there. Hold it.
Well, here's my question is, so is there a professional sports league that has a better developmental structure than the NFL? You got minor league baseball that requires investment that you have to push down. The NFL, how much money are they putting into college football?
Nothing.
Which is nothing.
They don't have to.
Nothing.
So a quick Google search on Steven, his net worth is $10.1 billion. So he could have doubled his net worth by taking that deal.
And he said no.
That's his reported net worth. I heard that
$10 billion is good enough. You're right.
I think he's got money in a nutrition company, Nutrition 53. I want to say
he's with Bill Romanowski.
Yeah, he's with Romo.
He's got a lot of money in coffee cans,
tax shelter
in his backyard as well. We'll talk to Chuck and Chernoff when we come back. We'll go back in time and double back on one of those worst teams of all time getting the last dance treatment to wrap up a Thursday afternoon here on Cellini and Domino. Matt Stinchcomb, Westy sitting in for Domino. He is back tomorrow. It's the Fan. 680-93.7 FM and the Fan app.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
And company.
Who does number two work for?
Sorry you had to hear that, Matt Stinchcomb. This is called The Dump. Matt Stinchcomb and Steve West in for Domino today. He's taking care of the kids. They're coming home from the Georgia College. He had to clean out the dorm. He said they have to be out by three. What are the odds they're going to be out by three? As you said, Stinch, what's going to happen if they're not out by three? Are they arrested, like protesters?
See, I was about to say, you've seen the way these kids are getting treated?
Yeah.
Down the hall.
None of them are students.
Down the hall and to the left.
To the left.
They're making him crazy. They are making him crazy. He's got on his app, on his phone, and ironically, he knows nothing about the cell phone or the smartphone. He sees on an app how much power they have left on their phones. And he gets nervous if it drops too low. I don't know.
I mean, he sees their charge?
Yeah. Oh, she's got
6%. Why do you need to know that?
She's got 6% on her phone. Exactly. I said, what do you... So she'll charge her phone.
How does that... I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
I can understand the data usage, and I can understand how much they're, you know...
He worries all the
screen
time.
Screen time, but...
Okay.
You're all idiots.
That's his response.
How is he alive?
I don't know.
You're all morons.
I really don't. But he likes to dump a lot of things on the table.
You're all stupid and ignorant.
Well, we are. That may very well be the case. An homage to him, Peacock released a trailer yesterday, Bronx Zoo 90. And the trailer in and of itself, even if you hate the Yankees, you'll want to watch this because it's beyond surreal what was going on that year. The only year the Yankees finished in last place in the American League East since division play began in 1969. You got George Steinbrenner. He got banned from baseball for trying to buy information to blackmail Dave Winfield from Howard Spira.
That happened.
A notorious gambler. You got Don Mattingly, who wants a new contract, so he's bitter. Pascual Perez, they signed as a free agent. He vanishes. Mm-hmm. He disappears. And we're not talking about just driving around 285. Nobody knew where he was. And then you got Deion Sanders going back and forth between baseball and football. And I'm just going to say Mel Hall. He's involved. Just I'm not going to mention his story on the air.
Yeah, that gets unseemly.
Yeah, look up the story of Mel Hall. Let's just put it this way. He's a part of this documentary, currently serving a 45-year sentence.
He's a predator.
He's a predator.
All
Chris Hansen would have gotten him, and we'll leave it at that.
All I remember about that team was they had this rookie named Kevin Moss, who pushed for the rookie of the year, had this huge home run thing, and they thought he was going to be the next kind of save the Yankees, and that fell apart too.
Matt, you were probably a little young for this, but like people know the origin of this, the Bronx Zoo, the Sparky Lyle book that he wrote after 76, which if you want a baseball book, Bronx Zoo from Sparky Lyle will tell you the story, man. He said it was so wild. He won the Cy Young in 77, and then they traded for somebody who played at his same position.
Goose Gossage.
He's like, hey, what are we doing here? So it's an homage to that from about 15 years earlier.
Has that happened in football context ever, where there was a guy who's playing at a high level, and then they bring in another guy at the same position?
That? Yeah, really.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. No. That's just crazy talk.
Kind of thing you'd write a book about.
I do say we miss George Steinbrenner stuff. Like Ted and George and that
guys,
drama.
Yeah, like George and the guy that you played for, Al Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Miss guys like that. I don't know if you felt
characters.
That way at the time, but...
Players on her.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. We're better with Ted Turner, Bill Veeck. Absolutely.
Your personality.
Guys, like, I am.
Who you people? Well, good razor. The people that you knew, you know them for a reason. They own sports teams. They were bigger than life personalities as well as checkbooks.
The only thing we have close is Jerry Jones will do his weekly thing. But even Jerry's tired and old. Like George, there was a chance he was going to yell at somebody on a live television interview in the post game and maybe fire somebody on TV.
All right, best Al Davis story, Matt Stinchcomb. Putting you on the spot.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. There was Woodson was renegotiating his contract, and this is at a practice. So Mr. Davis was always at practices. He was he was a football guy, which incidentally,
he was a coach back in the state.
What's crazy is he didn't make his money, you know, owning car dealerships or Wendy's or something. He was a football guy, and he co-opted his way, he grifted his way into an ownership position. So Charles Woodson's over there, and he's saying this. It's like a Friday practice. He goes, hey, I'm going to take all your money. He's saying this to Mr. Davis, who, if we'll keep in mind, he benched Marcus Allen trying to end his career when they got, you know, sideways over their contract dispute. So it's like, you don't say that to this guy. So Woodson's saying, I'm going to take all your money. I'm a gangster. And Mr. Davis is kind of sucks his teeth. When he gets angry, sucks the teeth. And he goes, no. I'm a gangster. You talk about, you know, everyone over there just within earshot's all puckered, like, oh my God.
By the way,
when are you going to even get on the bus? We kind of need this guy.
Low key, good Al Davis impression.
Yeah, very good. A lot of time. A lot of time to refine it.
So strong.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That was real.
Oh, he had a history. Ken Stabler turned into a Hall of Fame quarterback. He wanted to get paid. He was like, I'll trade you to Houston.
Yeah, man.
I don't care who you are.
It was so weird. You know, he loved guys like James Jett, who was never healthy, but was crazy fast. Wouldn't catch.
Swervin' Mervin.
But Tim Brown was always at odds with Tim Brown. And you're like, how? He's Mr. Raider. The guy's nothing but a high-level consistency, but he's a Heisman guy. So he wasn't a discovery. You know, it was obvious pick. He wasn't a, I'll mind the diamond out of the rough.
Now, when you got to the Raiders, when you were selected, the team had only recently moved back to Oakland. As you've seen everything play out in terms of the Raiders now being in Las Vegas and what you're seeing, the macabre scenes night after night at the Oakland Coliseum for the A's, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, it's sad for those guys, right? Yeah, I will say I hated the A's because we had to play on infield.
You got to play on second base. Yeah, you were one of the last fields.
Which I will say I learned very quickly ends up being an advantage because it's not that big of a deal. But whoever you were playing, if they didn't have
they
to deal with that.
They were freaked out by it.
They were freaked out about it. They were constantly, like, swapping out studs on their cleats and stuff. And like, it really isn't that big of a deal. It's unfortunate, and your jersey gets very messy. But otherwise, it's not that big of a deal. So we hated the A's. And, you know, Jason Giambi was Balcoing his brains out. And so there's all kinds of overlap. But it is sad to watch that and see that. I mean, the attendance is, what, not even in the hundreds, right? It's a morgue.
They're actually not doing all that
bad. Another couple
either.
Of games out of first.
Yeah.
Well, the division's
how do
bad.
How do we know that, though? Is anyone witnessing
these? I saw a headline. Tree falling.
They're like four games under now, or maybe about-ish.
Witnessed by tens of people. I mean, it's just sad.
What happens, though, in the weirdest, like, scenarios? They're in a bad division, and they're, like, a game out on Labor Day.
This is Major League.
Do the fans come out on Labor Day if they're, like, a game out?
They're the owner.
But wouldn't it be, like, it's your ex-wife. She's already telling you she's moving with the other guy, and you're like, all right, I'll come watch her one more time. It's like, weird.
Well, then I guess there's only one thing left to do.
Who goes to watch them in Sacramento next year? That's what I want to know.
The biggest mistake that the Titans ever made was announcing they were going to Memphis, but we're only going to be here for 2 years. So people in Memphis were like, well, why the F am I going to get invested if you're telling us you're only going to stop by?
They had one crowd over 50,000 that year, and
the NFL.
No surprise, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You can't tell. I mean, it's like the going out of business. You know, you don't want anybody to know that you're about to go out of, especially if it's like subscription-based stuff. Unless, of course, you are always going out of business and the sale never ends.
Right.
Brownlee
that doesn't
furniture.
Really work. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You're going out of business. Eventually, though, you're going to sell everything. I mean, so you are. It is going to come to an end.
Yeah. But if you need people to show up, hey, we're only here for two more years. Hey, but come on out to the ballpark. Nah, I don't think I will. They'll spend my time somewhere else. That doesn't even make sense.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really add up that way. So Chuck and Chernoff are here with us right now. And we talked to Brock Heward earlier about Michael Penix and the locker room and division. I guess it's just to a point now where we have to just sit back and let it play itself out. There's nothing more we could say about it that hasn't been said already.
What I said to Chuck, I find fascinating. I know we would harp on it, right? It's an Atlanta story. I'm blown away. The national media has not let go of this. They are a dog with a bone on this. And frankly, because I don't know, like the two biggest offseason stories in the NFL, the Falcons pursuit of Belichick and eventually passing on him. And now the controversial trade for Michael Penix.
Falcons are squarely in the middle of them. I think the Falcons have befuddled everybody with how they run their franchise. We've known it here for a long time, and I keep saying it. They're a chaotic organization. They're dysfunctional. They've run that way for a long time. I think the rest of the world is going, oh, okay, here are two more examples.
They literally found the only way to alienate a guy that you just promised probably $100 million, if not $135 million, to. You found a way to off-put that man.
Yeah.
Who's the nicest guy in the world, and you just said, we're going to give you at least $100 million. And he's looking at you sideways 6 weeks later. That tells me this was an EKG. Their quarterback plan has been just up and down and over here and a little bit back there, and it changed within the past 6 weeks. It blows my mind.
Makes no sense whatsoever, but...
Well, they'll tell you it makes sense.
They'll try to make sense out of it.
The succession plan, they will tell you makes sense, and we can all do all these ridiculous analogies, and some make sense and some don't, but I come back to the one that I had the day of the draft of, like, I've got a car, nice car, pretty good shape, expecting it to carry me for a few years. Then I got this really nice sports car that I spent a lot of money on, but I've got to park in the garage and wait for it for 3 years. That's a weird scenario.
And now you have to keep an eye on this defense, because when you look at the
corner
and you look at Richie Rent, what I'm saying
there's nothing there.
Yeah, and you could have had something there, but now you don't.
But it's the combo of the draft and Stinchy, but it's a combo. They did nothing in free agency to help the defense, and that shocked me as the weeks played out.
We've been kind of banging on this entire show, really, where we're sitting there going, wait a minute, this is not like you were, you know, inches away, and you just had one piece that you needed. You got that quarterback, and you might as well just grab
turnkey
another one.
Franchise that Kirk Cousins is walking into.
The coaching in the NFL, even though I grew up saying Wayne Fonts doesn't know anything about football. Yeah, everybody in the NFL knows a hell of a lot about football. The coaching's too good. They're going to find whoever the second corner is. They're going to find whoever the third corner winds up being.
See, my fear has become reality, Westy, that I said to Chuck, I have this weird feeling that Raheem's going to try to replicate what they did in L.A. a year ago, where they had these young,
no inexperienced. Name gang,
yes, and they managed to be okay. But the problem for the Falcons is,
hustle and hit.
Yeah, this schedule is, well, percentage-wise, the easiest in football. They got a ton of quarterbacks they have to play this year. They frankly, and again, the national media loves to do they were plug-and-play quarterback away. No, they're not. Nobody can name their edge rushers who are starting. Nobody can name the starting corner. Nobody knows if there's a better upgrade in Richie Grant at safety. Like, there are so many holes in this defense that nobody wants to look at nationwide.
You need effing ballers. All right? You need guys that on, like, Sunday night on the plane home, the other coach is going, what do we do about 97? Like, that's who scares an NFL coach. That's what you need.
You need guys.
How do we block Chris Jones? Well, we don't.
They make the scouting report. You need scouting report guys. It's not just who's number 17. No, we already know who
Micah
he is.
Micah Parsons, that side of the field is covered with lava.
Right.
All right, we're going over here.
We've seen this film before. And with scoring down league-wide, I think what the Falcons are thinking is, with all these skilled players we drafted, we bring in Kirk Cousins, and this is before the Penix drafting, that we can just outscore people. And I say this, Matt, we've been down this road before. This is June Jones in 1994 bringing in Jeff George all over again. We're just going to outscore people.
But it's also a lot of the Matt Ryan era, right? Well, like, Matt was really good. Matt didn't win every year, and we could blame Matt or not blame Matt. The defense most times was not up to the challenge to do it. The problem for the Kirk Cousin believer that Kirk's going to come and fix it all, Kirk was having his best year ever a year ago. They started 0-4. Okay? And they had a better offense, and they had a better defense. Kirk is not an elevator. Kirk needs people around him. Kirk's good. Kirk has never been jump on my back and I'm taking you places. That's not who he is.
Well, unfortunately, he's
that's what they're counting on.
Like,
yeah.
Well, no, they're counting on to be better than they were, and they're admitting, we're okay with being a little better. It's okay.
That is an unfortunate message. It does seem like, because the only way that it never works out. You can't make both of these things. I can't reconcile the two. I can't make one work and the other work
you've
at the same time.
You've capped your success. You've eliminated the floor goes out from under you, but you've capped in a pretty hard cap on your success.
And it's a good way to put it, actually, is that instead of saying, you know what, we're going to make a run here. We're going to give the pieces that Kirk would need.
Yep.
Early on to have success, and instead we're going to say we're okay with being okay. We're okay with being a little bit better than okay. And let's be real, based on what we've seen the past couple of seasons, the bar's pretty low.
That's the point.
Based on what we did with the first round pick, we're not going to really get better than that in the next two seasons. It's just, I don't like drafting to limitations. I really don't.
Y'all seen the Vegas total on the Falcons? It went up again. I mean, I look at this team and the schedule, and I hope I'm wrong. I want them to win. I said that all along. It's not what I'm rooting for. They look like a 7 or 8 win team.
That's with 9.5, 8.5.
We started 9.5 recently.
Okay, that's what it was.
And they have the 7th best odds to make the playoffs in the league. not in the NFC, in the league, that like people are doing the Kirk Cousins thing in the division thing.
The division.
How many times
too.
Do we need to do the division thing? Well, New Orleans and Tampa laughs at us going, you guys
three straight
the
years
division.
Now and nothing has changed. We got some breaking news, do
oh.
we not?
Oh, we have another quarterback?
No. Not signed another quarterback. Tiger Woods is going to play in the U.S. Open using a special
breaking
exemption.
News.
First time since 1996 he has not qualified for a major, but will play in the U.S. Open. Will he make the cut? That's another story for another time. Probably not.
What about sex? Will he have sex leading up to that one?
I don't see that anywhere on the screen.
Because he didn't have sex leading up to the Masters. That didn't seem to do much. Have sex.
Yeah.
You don't make the cut, you still had sex.
Like at the turn or
whatever. It's fine. I don't think you want to do it at the Open, but I'm just saying, like in general, if on a Thursday or a Tuesday, have sex.
What is the special exemption? What's the
Tiger exemption?
We want ratings.
We want someone to watch.
Is it
a storyline? That's the exemption.
Yeah. Gotta do something to get people to.
Speaking of the turn. The 150th running of the Kentucky Derby is this weekend. Does anyone care?
Tiger's going to run in that as well. I'm just being told. Get ready
for
the US
Open. Next to the horses, I'd watch. I really would.
Anybody had a mint julep and thinks it's anything other than vile?
I think that's
a gross drink.
Well, Chuck, wait a minute. That was the one redeemable thing that the Derby, maybe the primary reason that I even care about the Derby.
I don't have the advanced palate.
Is the mint julep.
Don't have the advanced palate.
West Paces Racing LLC, locally owned company. They have two horses in the Kentucky Derby.
Hey.
A little local angle.
Donnuck and Society Man.
What was it last year? I can't remember the name of the horse now, but because as we know, that is the winner. There was someone astride said horse, but the horse was the one that won the race. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, one of those like collective where everybody pools their money and buys a horse. I like that. I mean, I like the idea that the everyman can now participate in horse racing on some level. Now, to what extent will that get exploited? Because as we know, there are degenerate gamblers that are affiliated with the horse racing industry and degenerate cheaters, I might add. Bob Baffert, I think the guy's
the
name
horses
is.
Can't talk.
Great hair. They cannot talk. They've been interviewed many times and never quoted.
No.
But they,
off the record, they talk all the time.
In the stables.
Yeah. Has anybody,
that's what happens.
Anybody been? Because, Wes, you strike me as one who's been to the Derby, right?
I have never been to the
Kentucky
Derby.
I'm shocked because watching it on TV does nothing unless I'm gambling on it. But I've heard the party of all parties is what happens at the Derby.
Yeah, just look up Frank Duffy pictures from past Kentucky Derbies.
Westy, let's go to the Derby Saturday. We'll get some seersucker suits.
I've got to do a show with Dylan Shore. We'll never make post time.
Wise.
Yeah, we'll make post time.
You bring yourself a setup on the road, you'll be fine.
By the way, Fierceness and Sierra Leone are the early favorites at Churchill Downs.
That's the smartest horse I ever saw.
He's not so smart.
Yeah.
Sierra Leone, what an unoriginal name. You just name it after countries?
Are we going to do that thing where we ask you to name your horse? Sports Talk Radio?
What would your horse's name be? The 2 o'clock hour brought to you by Southern Exteriors, the Southeast premier home exterior solution. Quality and precision you can rely on for over 20 years. Visit southernexteriors.co, not .com. Today is May the 2nd. Let's go back in time and talk about some of the things that happened on this date. First and foremost, Jack Norworth and Albert von Tilzer register their popular song, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, for copyright. I'm not sure they had this in mind
real crazy crowd starts
when they wrote the song.
Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Are you ready?
I literally can't hear
One,
you.
2, 3, let's go.
On the scoreboard. Such a bit. He's playing such a bit.
Absolutely.
For him leaning into it.
This
is all a gimmick. It's great.
It's all vowel sounds. There's no consonants in there at all.
Some of this was Frank Drebin singing the national anthem, and he was just like making noises.
Was it Enrico Palazzo?
Yes.
Bunch of bombs in the air.
Let's get some runs. Come on, don't mess around. Don't mess around.
Yeah, that's not while he enunciates after it's over.
Let's jump ahead to 1994. Michael Bolton was found to have plagiarized the Isley Brothers' Love is a Wonderful Thing. And I think we have some evidence, do we not?
Love is a wonderful thing. Love is a wonderful thing. I said love.
Sounds a lot alike. You don't hear the difference in the ding, 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 ding? He had to pay.
This is the least surprising plagiarist of all of them, that Michael Bolton would be the least talented guy, so let me just steal somebody else's song, right?
Is it Hiding in Plain Sight? I thought it was the exact same clip two times in a row.
Meanwhile, that thing was nothing a huge different. Hit. Michael Bolton had that female crowd of, like, maybe it was just house mom or a certain age. They loved him.
Nicholas Sheridan.
Housewife who enjoys wine.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday night at Chastain. Yeah, all about Michael Bolton.
I just love that Michael Bolton. I loved him.
Were those hair extensions? Isn't that what we found out?
Put him on top of his head.
If they were, good for him.
No,
he got his money's worth.
From the Agassi collection, I think.
So Michael used to come to town, and he used to do this softball tour. Like, when he was at the height of his thing.
He takes himself very seriously.
Yeah, he was a softball player. Like, he put a team together, and he would play radio stations in different cities. And this is a true story, and you go out and see Michael Bolton.
He had loaded bats, from what I understand.
He took himself very seriously as a softball player.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like, he had a team of ringers with him. Like, it was Michael Bolton and, like, nine really, really good guys, and they would take on, like, the local radio station or whoever was.
Fox 97, Randy and Spiff in the morning.
The Crystal Critters.
Steve and Vicky.
Yep.
Plagiarism's a lot like tampering. If it works out, why not?
It,
right?
It's not easy to prove unless you have the money to really put the lawsuit together.
Unless you hear that.
Yeah. Or you got Suge Knight.
Yeah.
He's got a way to prove it.
You're right, Suge. I didn't plagiarize.
Yeah.
Whatever you say.
Back on the balcony.
97 on this date. Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, is released. Cost $16.5 million. Grossed $67.7 million worldwide. This is a character that Mike Myers sat on. Because whenever you did something on SNL and then you turned it into a movie, Lorne Michaels.
He controlled it. Yeah.
He sat on this character
for
years.
Just like an enormous wang. Pay attention.
So he had it.
Yep.
And never pitched it.
Nope.
Wow.
I was distracted by that enormous flying.
Johnson.
Very funny.
I mean, not funny at all.
Demeanor was here. That's
so wrong.
I don't see any humor in that.
So wrong. I'm sorry. If you didn't laugh at Austin Powers, something's wrong with you.
Oh, the golf cart getting stuck in the hallway.
But it's your fine.
Is there a funnier cameo than Will Ferrell's as Mustafa? Who broke?
I'm burned pretty bad. Still alive.
I think my leg is broken. Yep.
2008, a great comeback takes place. Iron Man is released.
That's the Iron Cheek.
Yes. Iron Man.
Yeah. Oh,
it's okay. He's Robert Downey Jr. Okay. $140 million was the budget. $585.7 million it made. And like you said, Robert Downey Jr. brought back to life.
Am I the only one in America who's never seen it?
I saw the first one because my kid was going through a Marvel phase.
It's not my jam, baby.
Not, I apologize.
You're saying that like you're proud.
I like what I like, and I don't see what I don't. It just never jumped off the page at me. Don't judge me, Stinchcomb.
You're a heavy judgment. What are you watching? In
a lot of bad stuff.
I was about to say.
Hey, I'm watching sports. Hey.
You're watching your movies.
Do your research. I lived it.
You guys are out there watching movies. There's just certain things. Do you watch stuff you're not interested in?
No. I try not to.
Okay. Yeah.
But you got to have to. I'm amazed that you never even kicked tires. That's interesting.
It's not my jam. My kids have all seen it. They love it.
Kicked off the. So you've heard it then. If your kids watch it, then you've heard the movie many times. You've just never seen it. Okay. All right. So you know what goes on.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson's birthday is today.
Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
With $800 million.
We are finally getting some negative Rock press for the first time in his career. So here's the deal. Stingy's looking at me with a.
The Maui stuff?
No.
Because he ended up giving a lot of money.
So he's showing up late. This is coming out for the movie The Red One, I believe it is, or Red Eye, or whatever the movie is doing now. It's an awful script, by the way. Somebody look up the script of this movie. This is one of the worst things I've ever heard. Anyway, he's shown up 7 and 8 hours late for call times. He completely didn't show up a few days, and now it's coming out that this has been a bit of a history on movie sets for him throughout his career. And again, this is one of the great Q factors of all time for a guy who's beloved by everybody, and finally, at this point in his career, dealing with some negative press.
The word on the street is, and a lot of people have denied it, it's also in this article that was written about him, this disparaging article, that he didn't want to use public restrooms, so he would go in a bottle, seal the bottle, and hand it to a production assistant to dispose of.
I know a lot of guys, I don't know why this is, that wouldn't go to the bathroom at school because they didn't like the school bathroom.
So my kids won't do that.
Yeah, that's
the only one. Andre Hastings said he would only go to a school that gave him his own bathroom.
Yeah, but he's doing a number
one. Share with someone.
Right. A bottle. He's not doing a number two.
That's not even true. So, McWhorter Hall had it was all suites. Yeah, you shared it with three other dudes.
So what I would say to The Rock is,
telling you what he was.
In the agreement, couldn't he have his own restroom set up where he could have some, I mean, this is not hard.
He just enjoyed humiliating people. I don't know.
That's
tough to aim. I would think he's,
Gatorade bottle.
But all right, still, so
you want the red one synopsis?
Yeah, please.
All right.
Listen to this.
This is from IMDb. After a shocking abduction from the North Pole, the commander of Elf
North Pole
Task Force must partner with the world's most infamous bounty hunter to save Christmas.
Oh, it was.
And J.K. Simmons is playing Santa Claus right. in this.
So this is like Santa with
muscles. J.K. Simmons.
This sounds like that so bad vehicle.
Right. This is what that's what I thought. The Rock, who's done a bunch of like mainstream stuff, and this is the choice.
Didn't J.K. Simmons win an Oscar for
Whiplash?
Whiplash. Thank you. So he wasn't doing insurance
commercials?
There's
no Mounds Bar down there.
I figure what happened was The Rock approached him first. Before he saw the full script, he's like, oh, The Rock's in it. I'll go do it. And then he read it and went, oh, hell, I'm committed. I'm going to play Santa in the red one.
He didn't even look. He doesn't even give Santa vibes. He couldn't have been good in that
role. Well, you can do makeup and,
I guess. But even then, he's got kind of the bulgy eyes. So.
Oh, how about that?
Have you watched the UFL? I'm talking to you, Matt.
No.
Well, The Rock does run the UFL.
He's already asked all of us, so he wants to talk to you.
I've not.
I'm shocked you haven't watched the UFL. Why wouldn't you watch that? It's football.
Here's what I don't understand.
It is football.
Nothing works but the NFL. Why would anybody waste their time and money trying to create a new league? Nothing works but the NFL when
because
it comes
the
to
ego
football.
The ego is the ego.
No,
college football, obviously. I'm talking about pro
Another
football.
Professional vehicle.
Nothing's going to work.
But you can't gamble on games that aren't being played. So,
but if you're The Rock, you're the same reason you were Donald Trump, or the same reason you're Vince McMahon, that I can be the one to finally have success in a sport other than, or the league other than the NFL. It's all ego. There's no other reason.
There was, the AAFL, the one that Pauline was behind? AAL, two A's, but no L.
Correct.
Got it. Added an L.
They still owe me for two games, by the way, but go ahead.
Oh.
But I'm not bitter.
Did you see that Arena League story this past week? The Philadelphia team, they got kicked out of their Motel 8.
They're staying in a Motel 8?
Yeah. They got kicked out.
Credit card declined?
Someone thought that an investor was going to buy the franchise, and then it never happened. And because it never happened, they had to just trim a bunch of players off the roster.
Oh, wow. What is this Motel 8? Is that akin to Motel 6?
Maybe, yeah.
It's a step up.
Two
steps up.
It's like 7-minute abs.
I think it's a Super 8.
Super 8, that's right.
Yeah, there we go.
Super 8.
Matt,
Motel
you don't know
6,
this.
Super 8, what's the difference? They leave the light on for you.
You don't know this, but the Birmingham Stallions are going for a three-peat this year. And they're 5-0.
No kidding.
And Matt Corral's the quarterback.
It's a different league, though.
I did not know that. That's
great. But they won the USFL twice.
Okay.
And now they're going
for
let's
go to Birmingham, you and I. We'll go watch a UFL.
So you can do both. Maybe you go to the Birmingham game, and then you go to the Derby. What a day.
We got a show with Dylan on Saturday.
You're obsessed with the show with Dylan.
One of these days, you're not going to have a show with Dylan.
And I got a show on Sunday.
It'll be too late to call me then.
I got a show on Sunday from Rock and Taco in Roswell for Cinco de Mayo. I'm busy man this weekend.
Finally, Lou Graham, one-time lead singer from Foreigner. He's 74 today. He's touring with Brett Michaels.
Really?
Yeah. The Party Gras tour.
He's 74.
Yeah.
Party Gras is great, by the way.
He's worth $25 million. I got to tell you, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I don't mean to say anything disparaging about Lou Graham. I saw a couple of his performances as of late. There comes a point in time where you're just better off seeing a cover band than the actual band. And I'll leave it at that.
Do we know where the Party Gras tour is making stops?
Mayor's Bank Amphitheater.
How about that?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a big
Shouldn't video. We go to that? That's I'm looking now. August 31st, 7 p.m.
Show trip.
Sounds hot.
That's week one for college football. We're not doing that.
Yeah. Westy, you are just a killjoy.
Don't you understand? He's got another show to do with Dylan.
That was the Eddie Money show at the old Service Merchandise at Gwinnett Place that became Wild Bills.
Wow.
Saw Eddie Money there, and I realized about three songs in, every time we got to the chorus where you got to bring it home, he would just hold the mic out to the crowd. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. I'm singing for Eddie tonight, apparently.
Bought tickets to hear me. You get it for free.
All right, listen, Westy, if you don't want to do August 31st, I'm seeing West Palm Beach. I'm seeing stops in Maryland, Texas, Washington. There are options that we can do if we need to see this.
Can you find me a Sunday night after I get done with the NFL show, and then I can catch a flight?
In the Orange Deck.
He's apparently planned for the Tortuga Music Festival in Fort Lauderdale coming up later on this summer. So just something
that
to think
about.
That
might work. Okay. I did Buck's show once and flew to Miami to see the Hurricanes play.
Same thing.
It's doable.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank Brock Heward for joining us today. Matt Lear, Adam Gillespie on the other side of the glass, Derek Thomas as well. Thank you all. Stinch, Westy, a pleasure. Let's do this again real soon.
A lot of fun, man. Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure. The pleasure.
I'm a gangster.
Is all mine. The Al Davis impression put it over the top. Out of nowhere. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We're back tomorrow at 11. Cellini, Domino, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.